Healthy alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. My name is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about is the idea that most of us really want to reach optimum health, optimum levels of wellness. We want to feel better, live longer, and enjoy life even more. That's what we attempt to bring to you each week with Healthy Alternatives. Every week, I like to begin the show by talking about an issue or concern you should know about because it can have an impact on you. And a little bit later, I talk about a healthy breakthrough. And these are going to be related. They're going to be the C word, which is cancer, that I want to talk about. So first, let's talk about the issue. And that is that there's research out there that is being fabricated. The Office of Research Integrity, the U.S. Department of Health, reported in August of 2011 that Xing Wang from Boston University School of Medicine Cancer Research Center fabricated the results he had in 2 papers that were published. And they found that actually 6 of the 7 figures in the study were from fabricated experiments. Now, they're going to retract the papers, and he has stopped working for Boston University in July. Guess what? He's only going to be ineligible for federal funding for 2 years. That means he can apply again to do some more fabricated research. So, is this a broader issue than just this guy? The answer, unfortunately, is yes. The Wall Street Journal reported in 2001 that there were 22 retraction notices published in medical journals. 2006, it jumped to 139. Last year, it was 339. And through the first 7 months of this year, it's already at 210. So we're talking about major fabrication that's happening out there. Even the Mayo Clinic discovered that they had 17 scholarly papers that had published in 9 journals had to be retracted. The researcher was fired, but 18 journals said they are now planning to retract a total of 89 published studies by a German anesthesiologist. This is a real issue that's out there, folks. In 2009, Dr. Scott Rubin, who was a well-respected, prominent anesthesiologist, he was a former chief of acute pain of Bay State Medical Center, a former professor at Tufts University Medical School. He fabricated data for 21 studies. What does all this mean? This means that a study's published, it's fabricated. Other researchers, because it was published in prestigious journals, say, hey, this looks real good, and we can rely on it, and so let's set up our research to follow this other research, and they're spending millions and millions of dollars on something that started out totally false. How did this happen? Well, part of it is the amount of money that's involved from the drug companies out there, but also these studies, the gold standard is that your peers will review these studies. Well, your peers who are doing the review are unpaid, they're anonymous, they're unaccountable to anybody, so there's no standards, no expertise for the reviewers, and nobody knows what the internal workings are other than them saying that it ought to be published. So that the whole system really needs to be looked at and looked at very, very closely, because this is really injuring people. It's causing millions and millions of dollars to be spent uselessly and causing great suffering to happen amongst people. Today I'm going to be talking to a friend of mine, Jack Canfield. Jack is the co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul book series, which has sold more than 125 million books around the world. Time magazine called this the publishing phenomena of the decade. And Jack is a leading expert in creating peak performance in entrepreneurs, corporate leaders, managers. And he's affectionately known as America's number one success coach. His most recent national bestseller that we're going to be talking about is The Success Principles, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. So we're going to be joining Jack in just a few minutes. If you want to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can click on the globe on this page, or you can go to teplitz.com, T-E-P-L-I-T-Z.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. I also do a monthly e-newsletter that you can sign up on teplitz.com. Click on the home button, and you'll see you can sign up there. So every week I like to talk to you about the healthy breakthrough I mentioned earlier, and this is the latest discoveries, latest information about healthy alternatives you can use for yourself, your family, and loved ones. And I said we were going to carry the theme of talking about cancer through this one. And what I want to talk about is new research out there that is showing that exercise can reduce the risk of dying from cancer and minimize the side effects of treatment, and that exercise is safe during and even after most types of cancer treatment. It used to be the docs would say, just relax, don't do anything, you're going through chemo, through radiation. And what's come out now, and this is from reported by the Macmillan Cancer Support Group, is that if physical exercise were a drug, it would be making major headlines. Why? Because it is showing that you can reduce the risk of breast cancer recurring by 40% by doing moderate exercise. You can actually reduce fatigue levels, increase weight gain. For prostate cancer patients, the risk of dying from the disease is reduced up to 30%. Bowel cancer patients, risk of dying from the disease can be cut around 50% by doing 6 hours of moderate physical activity a week. That's for the bowel cancer folks. For other folks who are exercising, they're talking about 2.5 to 3 hours or so. One of the studies that was published by Harvard Medical School, the researchers found patients who exercise moderately in the 3 to 5 hour range reduced their odds of dying from breast cancer by about half compared to women who were sedentary. So what you really need to do for yourself if you or a loved one has cancer is get them moving. Get them active. You can also reduce fatigue and improve your energy levels. You'll wind up sleeping better. You'll build muscle strength, relieve pain. You'll improve appetite. You'll maintain a healthy weight. As I said earlier, if this was a drug, and that's what some of the researchers said, it would make phenomenal headlines. So you really need to look at getting exercise if you have cancer, or to prevent cancer. You can also look at exercise as, quote unquote, the drug of choice. Before I bring on my guest, Jack Canfield, I'd like to pause for this message.
Every one of us is under stress from work, family, the economy, layoffs, the inability to retire. These are the realities today. Even if you're doing okay, we all have friends and relatives experiencing hard times. Hey, just watching the news can make you nervous. Make no mistake, there's nothing benign about stress. It can lead to high blood pressure, digestive problems, difficulty concentrating, and increased risk of disease. That's why Dr. Jerry Teplitz wrote the book Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. He presents easy, effective techniques to reduce stress, eliminate pain, relieve insomnia, and gain an overall sense of well-being. Managing Your Stress is fully illustrated and provides hands-on, proven methods you can use immediately. Dr. Teplitz knows how to cut to the chase. He begins working with you from the very first page of Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. Click on the cover that you see on the WebTalkRadio.net page in front of you and buy it now. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, and it will change your life.
My guest today is Jack Canfield. Jack is co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul book series. Over 125 million books have been sold worldwide. And Jack has been the key person in this endeavor, along with Mark Victor Hansen. Time magazine actually called the Chicken Soup for the Soul book series the publishing phenomena of the decade. Jack is also affectionately known as America's number one success coach, and he is a Harvard graduate with a master's degree in psychological education and one of the earliest champions of peak performance. His most recent book we're going to be talking about is the national bestseller, The Success Principles, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. And Jack is also a syndicated columnist. He's in 150 papers worldwide, and his Chicken Soup for the Soul radio shows are syndicated throughout North America. He actually holds the Guinness Book of World Records for having 7 books simultaneously on the New York Times bestseller list, and he's been on shows such as Oprah, Montel, Larry King Live, Inside Edition, The Today Show, and many, many others. And Jack, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
My pleasure, Jerry.
And for listeners to know, I've known Jack also for many years before Chicken Soup even began. And so, Jack, you've been spending more than 30 years studying and applying the principles of success. What do you see as the biggest difference between people who are successful and those who are not?
Well, basically, I think it's a system. You know, people that have studied success and have made a desire to have success, the main thing is you have to have a goal. You have to want to achieve it. You have to believe in it. And my experience is, just for example, we did a book called The Power of Focus, and we interviewed 2,000 entrepreneurs. And we found that the ones that were successful versus the ones that weren't, there were three things that determined that. Number one, they took 100% responsibility for their life. Number two, that means there was no blaming, no complaining. Number two, they had a clarity of vision, purpose, mission, and goals and values that most people don't have. You could ask them what their goals for the year were, they knew. And my experience is, if I ask people that, maybe 3% of people will tell me what their goals are and know where they are in relation to achieving them. And the third thing is they're action-oriented. They tend to, you know, not just talk about things, but get into action and actually do things that produce results. And I think the other thing would be, having a belief in yourself, high self-esteem, and getting out there in the world and knowing that if I take action, I'm likely to have success. And so that belief in self.
Now, how do you define success overall? Because there's, lots of different ways of looking at success. How would you define that for our listeners?
Well, I used to define it as being able to do whatever you wanted, meaning you could produce whatever result you wanted in life. If you wanted a car, you could create one. If you wanted a job, you could get one. If you wanted to lose weight, you lost it. But lately, I've been defining success as fulfilling your soul's purpose, meaning that if you get to the end of your life, I think it was Stephen Covey said, and you get to the top of the ladder, but you find out the ladder was leaning against the wrong wall, it's not going to be that fulfilling. So basically, I think everybody has a purpose, and it's understandable, and you can find out what it is by doing some exercises. And then if you fulfill that purpose, then I think you're successful. For some people, that's being a musician. For some people, that's being a psychotherapist. For someone else, it might be being an artist. For someone else, a successful entrepreneur. And when you find out what that is and you fulfill that purpose, then I think you are successful. Doesn't matter how much money you make or how famous you are or what toys you were able to amass.
So I've heard other people talk about it as about kind of following your passion.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be in line with what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I think, I define the whole game as being able to experience joy. And I believe that when you're following what you're supposed to do, your life purpose, you experience joy. So if you're doing something and you're not experiencing joy, it probably means you're off purpose. So I believe everyone does have a passion underneath, something that they get real excited about. They can't wait to get up in the morning and do. And so my passion is to inspire and empower people to live their highest vision in a context of love and joy. And whether it's doing an interview like this or writing a book or being on stage or coaching somebody, if I'm doing that, then I am extremely happy, fulfilled, and successful.
Now, what do you see as the biggest obstacle that people face today in becoming more successful with everything that's going on out there?
Well, I think there's two things. One is complacency and the other is resignation. They're both sides of the same coin, which basically means I'm stuck in my comfort zone. We find that most people are a kind of victim of their habits. You know, most people get up and do the same things day after day after day. I teach a little formula called E plus R equals O. There are events in life like the recession. There's a response to that event and you get an outcome. And 2 plus 2 equals 4. And all of a sudden the economy is doing 1 instead of 2. 1 plus 2 equals 3. You're not getting as much. So things are constantly changing, and yet people don't seem to want to change along with it. They just give up, go into resignation, say, well, I guess this is as good as it gets. And the other is they're successful, and they get comfortable at the level of success they are, so they don't actually grow.
Now, what about with all the with what is going on out there nowadays, the job market and the housing markets, and because there's a lot of fear and uncertainty, so how would you advise people to look at dealing with that?
Well, I think that, you know, basically all fear, all self-doubt, uncertainty, as you say, is self-created. We actually have a view of what's going on, and then we create thoughts around it. And those thoughts can either be positive, like, I don't care what the economy is doing, I always do well. Or, oh my God, the economy's tanking, I'm probably going to lose my job, I might lose my house, I'm going to foreclose my mortgage, I better, you know, cut back, better be cautious, better not say what I feel to the boss, I could lose my job. And all of that uncertainty and fear is going into the future and imagining bad things as opposed to imagining good things. So I teach people to stay focused on your vision of your ideal life rather than focused on what's currently happening in the world. Now, you have to be aware of what's happening. If you don't want to be, you know, going down the freeway when there's an accident at 70 miles an hour, not putting on the brakes. But the reality is that we need to have most of our attention on what it is we want. Talk about it, visualize about it, study about it, work on it, do affirmations around it, and stay in that positive zone.
There's actually research that I've run across that I think it was a grad class of Harvard graduates or Yale graduates that they tracked through their entire lifespan, and the people who lived longer, stayed healthy, enjoyed life the most were the folks who were the optimists versus the pessimists by about 7 years.
Yeah.
So the notion that you're talking about even has a longevity factor attached to it.
That's absolutely right. And not just longevity, but also healthy. You know, people, they get sick less, and when they do get sick, they get better faster. So, yeah, I've seen there's tons of studies on optimism and positive psychology and so forth that would validate that.
Now, with back to a little bit of what's going on in the economy with people looking at, you know, what should I do at this point? Should I, quote unquote, kind of like Congress is doing, let's cut all our debt, let's pay down our credit, let's eliminate unnecessary spending, not go out to dinner. But your view is different than that, that this is really where you need to be investing in personal development. Why would you have that approach at this point, Jack?
Well, basically, whenever there's a challenge, you want to get better. If you're a golfer and you're starting to slice them off to the right or hook them off to the other direction, whatever, what's happening is that you need to slow down, pay attention, perhaps get a coach, get more skill, hone your talents and your awarenesses. And the same thing is true in the economy. This is a time where we need to get more efficient, more effective, smarter, and pay attention more. And that requires, you know, having a coach or having, you know, listening to programs like yours, listening to CDs, watching videos, whatever it might be, so that we get better. I think it was Jim Rohn who said, when the going gets tough, don't pray for it to be easier. Pray for you to be better. And so I think that these are opportunities to actually grow and become more effective. You know, steel gets tempered when it's stressed. A golf ball has little divots, little holes in it, little dimples. And original golf balls were totally smooth. And they found out that as people used them, they would put little nicks in them. And the more nicks that they put in them, the farther they went and the more straight they went. And so, you know, this is an opportunity to get better and improve rather than to complain or to pull back.
So before we continue, I'd like to remind you that you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net. And we'll be back with my guest, Jack Canfield, in just a moment.
Improve your golf game today. It's absolutely possible using the DVD Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf, from stress management coach Dr. Jerry Teplitz. Par and Beyond is a revolutionary new concept that yields immediate results. You'll experience the difference the very next time you play. Even the golf pros love this method. Randy Taylor hadn't placed in a tournament for 8 years, but just 1 week after taking this seminar, he came in second. It's not just in your swing, it's in your head. That's why TNI Golf Magazine calls Dr. Teplitz a headmaster. Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf is available on DVD. You can get it by clicking on the Par and Beyond cover on the WebTalkRadio.net screen in front of you. You'll learn new, powerful techniques that will instantly improve your game, whether you're a pro or a duffer. This is your new secret to success on the course. It's a totally different approach, and it comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. And don't tell your golf buddies. You're about to become a winner.
So my guest today is Jack Canfield. He's co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul book series. They've had more than 125 million sold worldwide. He's affectionately known as America's number one success coach, and he's a Harvard graduate with a master's degree in psychological education, one of the earliest champions of peak performance. His latest book that we're talking about is The Success Principles, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. And so, Jack, you were featured in the best-selling movie The Secret, which is about the law of attraction and how to use it to increase success. For listeners who aren't familiar with this concept, can you quickly explain what the law of attraction is about and how it works?
Basically, the law of attraction says whatever you think about, focus on, feel strongly about, talk about, you're going to attract more of into your life. If you think of it as the, like attracts like, the idea that if you're basically negative, you're going to attract more things to be negative about. Everything's energy, and thought is controlled. Energy, rather, is controlled by thought. The direction of the energy is controlled by your thinking. The speed at which you go in that direction is controlled by your emotions. If you think of a car, think of the steering wheel as your thoughts. Think of the gas pedal as your feelings. This is why in the law of attraction, we talk a lot about how important it is to visualize and talk about what you want. But the more feeling you put into it, the more excitement, the more gratitude, the more energy, and the more intensity of those feelings, the faster you will attract these things to you. Because that which is vibrating at the same vibration you are naturally attracts each other.
Now, you've got folks out there nowadays who are saying like things, I really want a job, I really want a job, I really want a job, and really mean it, but it's not working. So can you tell us about some mistakes that may be happening for folks when they use that and how you view the right way to apply it is?
Yeah, you can't just sit there and say, I want a job or I have a job or visualize it and not do anything else, because what happens is there are limiting beliefs that live in the subconscious level of your mind quite often. So you might be saying, you know, I would like to have this job, but there's no jobs available. I'd like to have this job, but they're not hiring non-college graduates. Like to have this job, but I'm not qualified for it. So what happens is there's like a, it's like kind of saying, I want that car, but I don't deserve it. There's a qualifying doubt that comes in. It actually cancels out the desire. I don't know if you've ever seen these Bose noise reduction headphones. Works the same way. You're on a plane. There's a wave coming in of sound. The headphones take that wave, create the opposite wave. So you got one wave going up, one wave going down. They actually collapse each other into a flat line. You don't hear the sound anymore. The same thing is true when you have a desire, but you have a conflicting belief or a doubt or a fear. You know, fear of if you get money, your family's all going to come to you and want to stay in your house or whatever. So those things actually cancel out the desire, the intention. So we have to really get clear about what those are. That's where the inner work of meditation, affirmations, inner belief work, EFT, Sedona method, Byron Katie's work, all these techniques that exist to help you identify what are my limiting beliefs, what are my negative emotions, how can I release those, disappear them, and replace them with positive beliefs and positive emotions. The other piece that I find is that people will tell me, I've watched The Secret 600 times and I'm still not a millionaire. And I say, stop watching The Secret, do the things that make money. So the action phase is really critical. The last six letters in the word attraction are action, A-C-T-I-O-N. And so there's a clue in there that we have to take action. And action, there's two kind of actions, Jerry. One is obvious. Want to be a doctor, got to study, you know, biomechanics and physiology and biochemistry and so forth. But there's also what we call inspired actions. I'm sitting there at my house. I get an inspiration. I should go down and take Mrs. Jones some cookies. If I do, often what happens is I get there and I walk in and she says, oh, I'd like you to meet my nephew. He's the director of admissions for the Stanford Medical School. And those kind of things, if you don't follow those little inspirations, those little prompts that show up inside you, what I call inspired actions, then often you miss the exact thing that would have given you what you want. Sometimes they make no sense whatever. Get off and go to this Starbucks today instead of that one. But while you're in line, you start talking to someone who just graduated medical school and knows the director of admissions. So that kind of action is critical.
Nowadays, some people will probably be going, what, you want me to go spend money at a Starbucks? and the answer is, yes, listen.
But only if you get that prompt. But yeah, I hear you. There's cheaper ways to drink coffee. But you never know. If you're in your house, and most people are in their house and they're sending out, you know, resumes by email and so forth and so on, most things in life happen when you're in relationship to somebody, and usually that's face-to-face. And so getting out in the world where the game is being played is what people need to do, not cocoon in their cave.
Now, you were talking a little bit about self-talk, in effect, when you're saying that little voice that you've got behind us inside. Can you talk a little bit more about that, about really how you change it in more specifics from what you found works the best?
What I found with self-talk is there's two voices. There's the what we call the top dog voice and the underdog, the inner critic. When we talk about having an inner critic, there has to be a part that's being criticized. And so we tend to identify with the part that's being beaten up rather than the part that's beating ourselves up. And what I've learned in the years I've worked with clients is something called the law of replacement. You can't get rid of a negative thought unless you replace it with a positive thought. This is why exercises like talking to yourself in the mirror in a positive way, acknowledging your strengths and your successes for the day, doing affirmations, reading positive literature, listening to positive CDs and watching DVDs and shows like yours and so forth. It's reprogramming the brain with new ideas. And, you know, if you find yourself talking to yourself negatively, you know, one of the oldest techniques around, I think it came from Silva, the Silva method, is just say cancel, and replace it with a positive one. And you have to catch yourself. I used to wear a rubber band around my left wrist. Whenever I'd say something negative, if I caught myself, I'd snap it, not to hurt myself, but just to awake me, you know, make me more awake about what I was doing, and then replace it with the positive. And if you do that over time and surround yourself with positive people, positive input, positive books, you become positive. It's just a matter of commitment, daily discipline.
So how sore was your wrist initially when you started out?
It was the first couple of weeks I did that, it was rather red.
Yeah, and as listeners out to Healthy Alternatives know, one of the methods that I recommend is Brain Gym, and have it in my book Switched On Selling as a way for salespeople to get themselves rewired as well. Now, Jack, you conduct a day-long Success Principles workshop. Is a day-long workshop enough time to, from your standpoint, to make a difference in someone's life?
I think a day can be a turning point. I don't think it's enough. I think that's why I teach what I call the daily disciplines of success. You have to get up. You have to meditate, do your visualization, do your affirmations, plan your day, notice any negative self-talk, replace it with positive self-talk, or use EFT, tapping, any of the Brain Gym techniques you teach to put in the positive, get rid of the negative, and then you can go out in the world. But I think a day is enough time to learn those techniques, and is also enough time to be inspired and motivated enough to actually want to do them. We teach something called the 30-day principle. It comes from some research that NASA neurologists did with astronauts that proves you have to do a new technique for 30 days in a row without missing one day before it becomes a habit. Most people skip a couple days in there. Even though they've done it for 30 days, they miss day 14, day 22. It doesn't work. This is one of the big reasons that self-help programs don't work, is the lack of commitment to the daily disciplines long enough to make it a habit.
Now, what's the most important lesson you want listeners to take away from what we've been talking about today, since this has been a mini workshop?
I think the main thing I want people to know is that you can change your life. You can get what you want. It is all up to you. We need to stop blaming, complaining about the economy, the president, whatever, the Congress, and start saying, okay, what can I do to make my life better? What does it look like when it will be like what I want it? What are the steps I can take? And then start taking those steps. We can change and become anything we want. You know, you see immigrants from other countries that come in with nothing, and 10 years later, they're millionaires. If they can do it, anybody can do it.
Now, you offer people, folks of you've trained as coaches, I believe, that to really assist them in this process. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, basically, I have a train-the-trainer program, and we teach people how to do the kind of work I do. It's a year-long program, three-week-long workshops over the course of the year with all kinds of support in between. We also do a seven-day training in the summer. We have a coaching program where people can hire our coaches to coach them over the phone. And we have all kinds of resources at our website, jackcanfield.com.
Great. And so besides jackfield.com, if you want to learn more specifically about success principles, you can go to another site Jack has called the successprinciplesworkshop.com. That's the successprinciplesworkshop.com. Jack, thanks for being a guest today on Healthy Alternatives.
My pleasure, Jerry. I always like talking to you.
Next week, my guest is going to be Kim Martin. Kim is founder and co-director of Grades of Green. Grades of Green is a nonprofit organization that helps parents and educators create a healthier environment for their school kids. Its mission is to inspire and empower kids and the broader school community to care for the environment. Before founding Grades of Green, Kim practiced environmental law for more than 15 years. She focused in on land use, water quality, air quality, and she specialized in enforcement of laws to protect water quality and stormwater runoff and urban runoff. Kim received a bachelor's degree from UCLA and her Juris Doctorate from Pepperdine School of Law. She taught environmental law at Pepperdine. And Grades of Green has been honored with many awards, including the U.S. EPA's prestigious Environmental Award. And so we're going to be talking to Kim about schools and what you can do for your school to create an awareness with the kids, with the parents, with the faculty, with the administrators, to really help everybody become more effective in dealing with pollution that's out there and create a healthy environment. You're not going to want to miss this one.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.